where I live.
RoboZone coming up. He's got a long way to go.
Retro Gaming Radio 2011. Keep it retro. Hello, folks. Welcome to the September 2011 edition of Retro Gaming Radio. This is Shane R. Monroe, your host. Welcome to the program. Well, this is show number two. Fantastic, right? On time and under budget, nonetheless. This is show number two of Retro Gaming Radio's gallant return from the ashes. And show number one for last month for August was very well received. A lot of people loved it. They liked the new format. And everyone's just happy to have the show back. I get it. And I'm pleased to bring it back for you. So, show number two, very exciting. We got tons of great stuff to talk about. First of all, a couple of questions that have come up. I'm going to use this little intro time here. One of the things that has come up for people who are actually using the Retro Gaming Radio Plus TV player, which you should be, because it really is the way the show was meant to be experienced, the new show was meant to be experienced, even though we do offer it in audio only. A lot of people were a little bit confused that they weren't seeing a video stream all the time. Like when the show first starts, there's no video. How come? What's the deal with that? Simply put, the video clips are on demand. In other words, they only come when I demand them. No, seriously. When I have a segment that comes in that needs video, a trailer or some sort of gameplay video or something of that nature, then the video is queued up and played in that window. It's not a full-time video feed. It only happens when I need video. And that keeps the show from being too video-centric, and it also helps keep the bandwidth usage low and keeps more people engaged. So, just so you know, the video is not playing all the time. There'll be a standby video while we wait for the next video clip to get queued up. So usually I'll mention it on the show. Hey, I'm going to show you a video of this. I'm going to show you a video of that. And then you can take a closer look and the video should be playing. Speaking of which, I got a user email, a listener email came in. And I'm going to read that as part of this little intro piece. I'd like to start reading more listener email because I think it's important that the listeners that really get engaged with the show and really take the time and effort to send comments and suggestions really should get noticed. So this goes right along with the RGR Plus TV player. Matt Wilbur wrote in and said, I'm listening to the new RGR show right now. First off, I freaking love this concept of the embedded browser. My favorite part of the old show was the link segment, and this takes it to a whole new level. I saw your note about it not working in Safari or IE. Both browsers are the bane of my existence. I work with a bunch of Mac users, so I'm always battling Safari's, quote, features, unquote. The problem is that QuickTime doesn't natively support the OGG format. To get the show to work in Safari, all you have to do is install XIPHQT. I'm going to give you a link. In fact, we can probably load it up in the browser right now. Zif does something similar for IE, but fortunately, I haven't had to support HTML5 in the browser yet. I hope that helps. I'm really excited to see the show back. Well, thanks, Matt Wilbur, for sending that in. And we are going to post that along with the show this month and offer a download link so that people can get the other browsers working so they can enjoy the HTML5 player as well. One of the other comments that I got was that the HTML5 RGR Plus TV player was having difficulties in some browser displaying content in the browser sub-window. Yes, I understand that is a problem, and weirdly enough, it seems to happen when there's some sort of plug-in content in the HTML window. It doesn't do it with all browsers, and it doesn't do it all the time. I'm expecting that there's going to be some glitches with the HTML5 deal. So in order to fix that for this month's show, I'm offering you a pop-out box right above the HTML content window. You'll see a little tiny box now that looks like a little pop-out button. Anytime a website comes up that you would like to browse or even save for later, just click that little pop-up. It'll open up in a brand new window. It won't disturb the show. And that way you can use your browser's full potential to view and consume that content. And, of course, I do want to remind you that this is a listener feedback show, and the Bits and Bytes section, our news segment, is directly supported by the listeners, by you guys. And if you send an email to Bits Bytes or Bits and Bytes, either one works, whichever you can remember better, bitsandbytes@retrogamingradio.com, we will see it. We'll take a look at it. We can't include everything, obviously, but we will definitely look at the ones that we think offer the most bang for the buck, that may offer us personally some interest in who we think, what we think may interest our listeners. And we will provide that on the show. I've got a whole bunch of that to talk about today, too. So please, bitsandbytes@retrogamingradio.com would be perfect. This show, that's sort of, we're done with the intro now, so we're going to move on. The show summary, we are going to be doing a new editorial commentary on gameplay and controls being king in video gaming, our regular Bits and Bytes section, reviews of Cloanto's Amiga Forever 2012 edition, Bit Trip Complete on the Nintendo Wii, and the 3DS Ambassador Program only virtual console titled Super Mario Brothers on the Nintendo 3DS. So, very excited. I hope you enjoyed this new show. I hope you enjoyed the last show. And well, let's get on with it. I got too much to speak about to prattle on here. First, the editorial commentary. Game controls and gameplay being king. Now, for some reason, I thought developers understood this concept pretty well by this point, because I've been screaming about this particular issue for the better part of 20 years now, and I'm sick of talking about it, but I've got to because no one's listening. Number one, graphics do not make the game. It can enhance a game, but the bottom line is, if you want a great game, make a great game out of boxes, squares, circles, spheres, and primitives. If you can make a game that is awesome to play using primitives, it can only get better if you add great graphics and great sound and great atmosphere. That's my point. If you want a great game, don't think of the graphics first. Think of those last. I'm going to give you an example. I've talked about this in the past, but it's worth bringing up again. Orc Attack, one of my favorite Amiga games. It's a shareware game of all time. It's a great game, by the way. It's fantastic. You run around the top of this castle wall, and these orcs try to climb up the wall. You grab and throw rocks and smack them on the head. There's blood everywhere. They fall off screaming. It's my kind of game. Anyway, yeah, the developer of this title decided he wanted to start working on a Windows port or a PC port of this Amiga game. And he knew I was a fan. He found my fan site. And I think that's, let's see, what is that, monroeworld.com/orcattack. We'll see if we can get that queued up for you. Anyway, so he wrote me and he said, hey, you know, I love your fan site. Thank you so much for, you know, backing the game. I'm working on a PC version. Would you be interested in seeing an early build? And I said, hell yeah, I'm interested. Are you kidding me? That's sweet. So he sends me over a build, and this game is nothing but primitives. There's not a single orc to be found. There's not a single squire to be found. There's no sword graphics. This is all boxes, circles, triangles. And he sent it over, and I'm going, whoa, I guess this is an early build. But I started playing it like 2 hours go by. Why? Because it's a fantastic game, and it's a bunch of frickin' boxes. Nowadays, you could probably turn around and sell that like on Xbox Live as some sort of a retro platform game, and it would be popular just as it is, which is crazy. But then, that occurred to me. That was the time that I knew for sure that gaming is not about graphics. It never has been. It never should be. It's about the game. Now, okay, so we know now one of the secrets of good game design, making it fun without graphics. But what's the next piece of it? All we have to do is go back to the arcade games of the 80s, the 70s and 80s, and look at what we've learned from them. When, okay, granted, there was a lot of machine whoring, right? You could swap out boards, you could do upgrade kits, and you'd use the same control panel. My point is that in the early days, the greatest games of our times, the Robotrons, the Pac-Mans, the Space Invaders, these games all recreated a controller experience to suit their game. When Williams, the greatest maker of video games of all time, the Defender, the Stargate, the Bubbles, the Robotrons, the Sinistars, when they designed a game, the controls, they didn't break out a Nintendo pad, an NES pad, or a standard TAC 2 controller from the Commodore 64 and say, okay, let's build a game around four directions and a button. They built the game and said, crap, we're going to need another button. Crap, we need two joysticks. Crap, we need a lot more buttons. You know what? We don't need them to go back and forth. We just need them to go up and down. So let's not put a four-direction controller on here. Let's put a two-direction controller. They built the controls to meet the needs of the game. They didn't try to force you to play Defender with a four-direction controller and a fire button. The game just doesn't work that way. That's not the way the game was designed. And yet, in the latest incarnation of gaming, the tablets, the cell phones, they are trying to put games that have no business on these platforms on there and giving them the most horrible controls known to man. And you guys know what I'm talking about. Anybody who's had to suffer through a virtual D-pad game on your cell phone knows exactly what I'm talking about. How can you expect to play Robotron when there is no joystick at all? Okay, let me give you an example, right? Let's take Pac-Man. Pac-Man's a great example. Time-age classic. Everybody knows it. Pac-Man is a four-direction, no-button game. When you go to the arcade, or you went to the arcade and played Pac-Man, there was one red ball joystick sitting right there, a player one and a player two button, and that was it. Four directions. And in order to play Pac-Man, you needed precise control. You needed precise control over Pac-Man, which is why the less directions, the better. To navigate the maze, you only need four directions, up, down, left, and right. You don't need up and to the left. You don't need down and to the right. You need up, down, left, and right, period. That's the way to play it. Which is why the game, as horrible as it was on the Atari 2600, still played like the original Pac-Man. That's why it was popular, is because it played the same. You still had, you had an eight-direction joystick, but let's be honest, the directions didn't work all that well on the Atari 2600, the diagonals. So it was essentially a four-direction joystick with a button you didn't need. But suffice to say, my point is that Pac-Man played pretty good on that controller. Move up to, say, Pac-Man Championship Edition on the Xbox 360, right? That uses an analog stick to move Pac-Man around a four-directional maze. Now, the Xbox does have a D-pad on it, but it's an eight-direction D-pad. And the eight-direction D-pad constantly interferes with you being able to make split-second turns. I don't know how many times I've lost a life because I was trying to go up, and it didn't go up. It went back, and I ran right into a ghost, and I lost my chain and all this other crap that I was working so hard to build up, and I cursed it. Well, Microsoft came out with an Xbox 360 controller that allowed you to change the eight-direction control into a four-directional control. That was a step in the right direction, but let's be honest. Pac-Man needs a joystick. Hey, the four-direction pad was great. The analog stick is useless because you're constantly turning wrong. So that's not the right way to play Pac-Man. Not even Pac-Man Championship Edition. Now, take Pac-Man Championship Edition and move it to a cell phone or a tablet. Guess how you're controlling that now? If you're lucky, you've got a physical keyboard still on your phone, and you can use arrow keys. Now, does it suck to play with arrow keys? Yes, it does. My wife has the original Droid. I had the original Droid that had the full physical keyboard with the D-pad, and it played like hammered crap. All right? Now, most phones now don't even have physical keyboards. You don't even have buttons now. So now what do you got? Now you got a virtual D-pad, where you're expected to control four directions in lightning speed by moving your thumb around a touchscreen. There's no tactile support to it. There's no feeling. There's no resistance. It's horrifying. It's horrifying. I challenge anybody that even remotely likes Pac-Man to go play it on a virtual D-pad and come to me and try to tell me with any straight face that it's an okay control system. It's not. It is total ass. As is most virtual D-pad games. Now there's even bigger epic failures going on. They're releasing Pac-Man and Frogger, not even with D-pad controls, but get this, swipe controls. To make your frog hop across the street, you gotta swipe him up on the screen. You gotta swipe on the screen. I like touch gaming. I think that there's a huge market and a huge base set of gaming that can be done on a touch screen. But it ain't Frogger. Frogger's not a touch screen game. Okay? Robotron-esque games where you move and independently fire. Like, what's that? Gun Brothers. Gun Brothers is this big, you know, high resolution HD game you can play on your cell phone or your tablet. But you're expected to use not just one horrible virtual D-pad, but two. It is insane. You spend your entire time with these games fighting the controls. I don't even have time to get into the game because I'm too busy trying to figure out how come I'm not moving. How come I'm not shooting? How come I'm shooting this way and not that way? Look, dual stick games like Robotron-esque games need two sets of controls, and they need to be real controls. Even if it's a keyboard control, it's better than a virtual D-pad control. All right? There are a couple of games out there that have figured it out, like Tank Hero on the Android platform. I don't know if they make an iOS version, but I thought it was an exclusive. But Tank Hero actually says, how do you want to play? Do you want to play with dual D-pads, you know, virtual D-pads? Do you want to play with one D-pad and a fire button, which is still virtual, so you can't really push anything. You tap the screen. Do you want to play with a D-pad plus this? Do you want to play in a swipe mode? How do you want to play? And oddly enough, here's the sad part about that game, and this is a call to all game makers that insist on hammer-fisting games into a touchscreen device that shouldn't be there at all. If you're going to do that, some of us are not retarded, okay? We have found ways to sync up our Wii Remote to our Android devices. We have Bluetooth controllers now. Apple has, you know, iCade or some other physical controls. For God's sakes, make these games mappable. Make it to where I can play Tank Hero with my Wii Remote. God, that game would totally own ass if I could play it with my Wiimote. That game, that Gun Brothers game, if I could play it with the PS3's dual six-axis dual stick controller, that game would totally rock, but I can't even play that game because I have to use these stupid on-screen virtual D-pads. It's horrifying. Listen, I'm telling you right now, game developers, you are on a touchscreen device. There's no D-pads and there's no buttons. Okay, you have essentially one button. You can have a tap. You have tapping, sliding, pinching, and what's the opposite of pinching? Expanding. Contracting and expanding. Listen, there are a bajillion games that you can make right now that aren't Flight Control, that aren't Angry Birds, and that aren't Cut the Rope. You can make those games right now. You can make brand new games. Fun games. Games I would actually buy and be able to play on my tablet, if you guys would get your heads out of your butts long enough to realize these games you're making don't belong on the platform. Have you ever played Missile Command? Of course you have. You're listening to this show, of course you've played Missile Command. Have you ever played it in the arcade with an actual roller controller? Some of you have. Most of you probably have. Was that the best way to play Missile Command ever? That big, gigantic ball you could just wail on to move around, and it was tight, and you could make move your cursor around really precisely in these cool circles, and that was part of the secret of the game, right? Was being able to make circles with the roller controller to make clouds of missiles, right? I mean, this is not rocket science here. But then it came to the Atari 2600, and now all of a sudden we're playing Missile Command with a joystick. Was that fun? No, that wasn't fun at all. We still played it because it was Missile Command, but it wasn't fun. It wasn't funny, and it wasn't fun. Now, then we got like PC versions. We got versions we could play with a mouse. Hey, all of a sudden, it's fun again. Because you can pull off all those cool tricks. You can do those weird moves. You can actually have precise lining up with the enemy missiles that are coming in. It was the way it was supposed to be. Right? You ever played Missile Command with a keyboard? It sucks. Even worse than a joystick. Now I challenge you to play Missile Command with a virtual D-pad. Horrible. Fortunately, Missile Command does translate into a very decent touch game. And they've actually made a couple that are actually worth playing. And we're going to talk about those on another show. My point is, some games can be moved. Some gaming types, some genres can be moved to a touchscreen-only environment. But not all of them. Stop trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. It would make us all so much happier if you guys would concentrate instead of rehashing and rehoring old IPs like Frogger that don't work right on a touchscreen. It's time to come up with something new. It's time to actually innovate. You've got brand new hardware. It's time to start looking at why games like Angry Birds is one of the greatest selling cell phone games of all time. Why is Cut the Rope so popular? Why are tower defense games coming out by the gajillions? Which, by the way, I'm tired of tower defense games. Can we please move on? Thank you. These games are all huge sellers. Why? Because they're native. They're native games on a native device with native controls. My God. Listen, I'm gonna put out my services right now. I'm going to help out. Any of you cell phone or mobile developers that would like to know how to write a proper game, to come up with, if you don't have any ideas, I'm going to help you. I've got ideas. I could give you a golden idea for making a cell phone game right now that uses real cell phone controls. You don't have to hammer fist in a virtual D-pad or horrible non-tactile buttons or any of that crap. I've got at least 5 ideas in my head right now. I will share them with you. Drop me a line. Go to the website, retrogamingradio.com. Go to contact us and send me an email saying, listen, I'm a mobile developer, and I can't pull my head out of my ass to come up with anything that doesn't require a virtual D-pad. Can you please help me? I'm ashamed at the games that I'm putting out now. I would like to have your input on how I can make a good cell phone game that won't piss everybody off with a horrible virtual D-pad. Thank you. And I will respond. I will give you one of my golden ideas for a touch game. You can use it or not use it. I'm just saying, if I've got 5 ideas and I'm not a professional game developer, I guarantee you professional game developers have to be able to make this work. That's what I'm saying. Controls are king. If you cannot get past the controls, you cannot be engaged by a good story. You cannot be engaged by great graphics. You cannot be taken back by an awesome voiceover soundtrack if all you're doing the whole time is fighting those damn controls. Let's figure it out. Let's move on. And let's get mobile gaming a little bit more up to speed. Okay? Because that's where the controls are horribly failing right now. Let's pick it up. All right, on to bits and bytes, now that I've worked myself up almost into a tizzy. First up is the Nintendo NES emulator for the DS, called NES-DS. These guys are doing a good job at trying to create an NES experience on your Nintendo DS. Now, Nintendo DSs are like, they come in a box of cereal now. There's no reason not to have one. And if you're into emulation, the NES offers several different emulators, including this Nintendo NES emulator, which actually plays very well. The screen resolution works out right. The touchscreen offers a multitude of different tweaks and hacks and menu options that enhance the gameplay. It's really neat, and it's a no money emulator, which is the way emulators should be for the most part. So it's a freebie. So go try it out. Try your favorite NES games on it. I think you'll like it. These guys have been kicking around for quite a while, and they're constantly trying to figure out a way to make NES emulation as good as it can be, because there's always little glitches. You know how when programmers start exploiting the hardware, they tap undocumented features and whatnot, and then when you put these in an emulator, they totally croak. Well, these guys are obviously sensitive to that concept, and they're trying to provide you with the means of repairing these sort of things on the fly while you're playing. It's good stuff. I haven't played this version, but I've played versions before, and I've been pretty impressed. Even though I'm not a huge NES fan, it's a great emulator, so I suggest checking that out. And, of course, you've already got it on the screen in front of you if you're using the RGR Plus TV. player. All right, let's see. Lifehacker is an interesting site. I follow them through RSS news feeds. It's a very interesting. If I were to create a big public site, this is what I would have wanted to do. This is a self-help type site where they post tricks, tips, cheats, clever uses for odd products. Let me just give you an example of some of their headlines so you know what I'm talking about. How to mount ceiling speakers and wirelessly stream music to any room in your home. Let's see. Deals you can expect to see on Black Friday. How to make your own picture frames for $5 each. There was a couple of really good ones earlier that I was looking at. How to enable Facebook timeline right now. Make your own mind control headgear with a Star Wars toy. You get the idea? I mean, this is the sort of thing. Being the better person will teach people to treat you like crap. You know, they call that a mind hack. And so these things go on and on. And this is the sort of thing that they put out every, you know, every day. They've got dozens of these, you know, how to instead of using Swiffer pads that cost like $2 a piece, use wax paper. It works just as well. You know, these are the sort of things that they put out. So it's a really interesting site. And they're very diverse. They don't just talk about technology, but they talk about low tech stuff too. So I think it's a really cool site. In any event, so they put together an article on how to turn your computer into a retro game arcade. And most of the articles in this nature are pretty generic. They don't talk about a lot. They don't really tell you how to do stuff. They don't go into, you know, details. But they do. They talk about, you know, where to get ROMs, how to get ROMs, how to set up emulators, how they work, blah, 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 how to cheat, hacking your own ROMs. It's a remarkably decent article on the topic, which we normally don't see. So if you've got somebody who's interested in getting into retro gaming emulation, but, you know, sort of, you know, they don't want to build their life core around it, then that might be a great article to share with them. Side-scroller shoot-em-up game R-Type, very popular game. I was not a huge fan of it, not because I didn't like the genre, but because there weren't a whole lot of R-Types when I was growing up. Maybe it was an expensive cabinet. That's the only thing I can think of, because I lived in a smaller community, and we got a lot of games, but R-Type was just usually not one of them that I would see in the arcade. But this is a fast-action side-scrolling shooter. And guess what platform it's out for? Android, which means you get to play this great game now on your cell phone and your tablet. Of course, since you've listened to my rant now, you've got to know where I'm going next with this. Yeah, so how do you play it? Virtual D-pad. All right, now, a virtual D-pad in a very low-impact game like Pac-Man, where you have to make critical turns, but you don't have a screen full of bullets to dodge. I want you to imagine playing R-Type on a touchscreen. And do me a favor, you know, let me plug my ears before you scream. Because yes, it's as bad as you think it is. However, there's support for the Xperia phone, which is that Sony phone that actually has a joystick built, or I'm sorry, a D-pad built into it. That would be an okay way to play, I would imagine. But since I don't have one, I can't tell you for sure. But the game looks great. It looks faithful to the arcade. It sounds great. They did a great job, but the problem is you're putting a side-scroller shoot-em-up bullet game, a shmup, on a device that has no controls to play it. It's horrible. It makes me mental to see somebody go through this sort of effort to create and produce classic content for us, and then put it out with no way to play it. Now, I know what you're thinking. But Shane, my tablet, I can hook up a Wii Remote to it. I can hook up a PlayStation 6-axis controller. I can use a wired USB controller on my tablet with docking station, so I can use a 360 controller. Can I play R-Type with those controllers? Because that's the best way to play it. No. Sorry. Not supported. So listen to me, people. If you insist, I'm sorry, I'm back in rant mode, just give me a minute. If you insist on porting great titles like R-Type to a touch-only platform, please, for God help us, please, give us an ability to map the controls to an external controller. Dude, the iPhone has an IK. They have Bluetooth controllers. We have Bluetooth controllers on the Androids. God, for God's sakes, just make it keyboard playable. We'll map the keys ourselves. We're not retarded. We can do it. Just build the option into the game. All you gotta do is map a frickin' keyboard to it. That's it. How much more time can that take? You know, I had to write this down. I paid for R-Type. I bought it. Figuring one, I would support the efforts of the classic developers that are trying to bring us content from the past. And I figured, well, it's gotta be, I gotta be able to remap my controls. Right? I've gotta be able to plug in my Wii Remote and use my USB Joy to toggle the controls for this game so I can play it with my Wii Remote. Cause that'd be perfect. D-pad and a fire button. Perfect. No. So I paid $4.03, converted to American money. And I can't even play the damn game. Because I tried playing it with the virtual D-pad and I want to hang myself. Alright, so. R-Type is out. You can buy it for $4, roughly. But unless you've got an Xperia phone, don't expect it to be all super great and getting better, because it's not. It's actually going to be a pain in your ass to try to... Imagine playing any sort of game where you need lightning fast reflexes and you've got to use a virtual D-pad. That's what you got here. That's what we have. And it's a damn shame. So, do me a favor. If you're going to do it, if you're going to get into this, all right, I would like you to go to, if you're an Android user, go to the marketplace. It should be already up on your screen. Go there and rate the app and knock down a star or two and say, listen, this needs to be playable with an external controller. You know, let them know that that's what we want. Because I'm rocking this Asus Transformer tablet. I've got every emulator under the sun, and they all work with the Wii Remote. It's fantastic. Now I'd like to be able to actually buy new games I can use it on. For God's sakes, let me use my PlayStation 3 controller with that Gun Brothers. That would be so awesome. It looks like a fun game, but I'm never going to play it. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm out of rant mode. Makes me crazy. All right. Speaking of emulators, you've heard me talk in the past, either on this show or on my other shows, about a fantastic set of emulators from Robert Broglia. I wish you would write me back. I wrote the guy and said, listen, I'm going to be saying your name on the air. I'd like to know how to pronounce it so I say it right, but he never wrote me back. Robert Broglia is what I'm going to pronounce it, and it's probably wrong. He produces a fantastic series of emulators, what I call the .emu or EMU emulators. It's, you know, gbc.mu, md.mu, msx.mu, nes.mu. Anyway, he's got this whole series of them. And he also has one for the Super Nintendo, which is weird because it's actually called SNES 9X EX. I'm confused too. Don't worry about it. In any event, recently this great free, might I add, emulator was jerked off the Android market. I don't know if it still exists on iTunes for iOS, but it has been pulled off of the Android marketplace. So you are out of luck if you'd like to have that. However, as you can see on the web content of the RGR Plus TV player, we're providing you a link right to his website that will give you the option to pick this great emulator up. And his emulators, unlike these damn R-Type and Remake games, actually have built-in Wiimote support, which is the way that it should be. In any event, I really want to plug this guy because he's doing a great job bringing emulation to our new devices, and I'm really trying to get the guy to put together a Commodore 64 emulator because the ones that are on the market right now don't appeal to me very much. I would like a Commodore 64 emulator in the style of these .emu emulators, and I think he's the one to do it. And if you would, kindly drop him a note. Don't yell and scream at him, but drop him a nice note that says, listen, I'm going to go ahead and buy, you know, pick an emulator that you like, buy it from him so that you're supporting his work, and say, listen, I would like to see a Commodore 64 emulator. You know, if he gets enough people that are willing to cough up, you know, $4 a hit, I'm sure he's willing to do it. Now, normally, I know what you're thinking. You're saying, Shane, just in a few minutes ago, didn't you just say that you think emulators should be free? And I do. I think emulation in general should be free. But what this guy is doing is more than emulation. He's actually retooling. He's not just taking a port of, you know, WinVice and slapping, you know, basic Android controls on it. He's making it, he's really improving it by adding that Wiimote support and that sort of thing. That's what I want to promote. That's what I want to see him paid for, because it's the greatest implementation I've ever seen, and the guy deserves to be compensated. So check that out. The Tokyo Game Show revealed to us that Square Enix is bringing Final Fantasy Legends over to iPhone and Android this next year in 2012. Now, Final Fantasy isn't really my cup of tea. There are some of the grinding versions of Final Fantasy that I like. I think Final Fantasy III on the DS was fun for a while, because it's just grinding. There's not a lot of story to get in the way. I don't have to read 9 pages of text before I can start killing stuff. And according to this, there's good old-fashioned grinding, according to this article. So, there's not a lot of details yet, other than it's going to surround itself mostly with the early 16-bit era RPG mechanics. So that sounds pretty good to me. So we'll keep you up to date on that as we hear more information about Final Fantasy Legends on its way to both iPhone and Android. So that's exciting. Let's see. Next up on the list, before I go into my other minor tirade, Super Smash Land. Now, this is great. Let me read you the description right off Dan Fornant's site. Fornas. That's got to be right. Anyway, he's creating a game called Super Smash Land. It's already out. You can download it. Super Smash Land is a remake of Smash Brothers as if it came out for the original Game Boy. It uses the same color scheme, resolution, and controls. However, the engine is smoother, and I'll be allowing for 4-player combat. The roster is small and inspired by Smash 64 with Mario, Kirby, Link, and Pikachu heading the front. The game plays like a simple version of Smash, and I hope you enjoy it. Now, this only works on Windows, right? So, I like that the first comment that was posted on the original blog was, can't play it on Mac. And it's, well, whatever. You know, you've got GarageBand. Go play with that. We're going to be playing Super Smash Land on Windows, okay? Sorry, I got a chip on my shoulder about crap like that. Anyway, so Super Smash Land is actually, I'm not a big Smash Brothers fan. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not into the, you know, platform combat thing. I've just never been a fan, and I'm not sure I ever will be, but this is really well done. I like the concept. I like what the guy's doing with it. I like the concept of taking a very classic approach to gaming. And again, you know, it's low resolution. It's all green, right? So what do you got left? You got great gameplay. And, you know, I played it with the keyboard, but it played okay, but I'm assuming that there's some way to use an actual controller here. And that would be the option, you know, optimum way to play this thing. So anyway, check it out. I'm going to keep plugging this until we all get in the habit of this, but Super Smash Land, the website will be pushed down to you there in the RGR Plus TV player window for your immediate gratification. So check that out. This guy's got a donate button, and, you know, throw a guy a couple of bucks. You know, nobody gets any loving at all for doing projects like this. You know, all they get is crappy, like, oh, I can't play it on Linux, you suck. You know, the guy never gets any real recognition. So throw the guy a couple of bucks, he'll probably be a lot happier. Anyway, now it's time to get to the last item that's just going to put me in a foul mood for the rest of the day. A lot of you who've been here with the show from the beginning know that I originally started this show to champion the cause of emulation. While 20-year-old arcade games were rotting in operators and private collectors' homes, we were not getting the classics brought to us. You know, these arcade bundles are a dime a dozen now. Midway's arcade classics, Konami's classics, blah, blah, blah. They're all here now. But back then, you know, nobody was doing anything with these titles. They were taking the name Galaga and whoring it out on some grotesque 3D horrifying game. And it totally sucked. I didn't understand what the deal was. In any event. So along came emulators. People said, hey, you know, this is just regular hardware that's in these things. There's a 6502 chip. There's a Z80 chip in here. So people started writing cores for these processors. The next step was to replicate the hardware that was inside, say, Pac-Man or Space Invaders or whatever, in software. So they replicated these pieces of hardware and software. Eventually, these pieces all migrated together and became an emulator. So if your game ran on a Z80 processor with this sound chip and this video chip, if you stuffed the game code into this emulator, it would run and you could play the actual game. So emulation started off with like Sparcade and Retrocade and, of course, the venerable MAME. There were tons of these great emulators that came out. Now, in the beginning, emulation came out and everybody was okay with it. You know, everyone was having a good time. The people, the 30-plus people, were fine with playing it. The newbies didn't care. Nobody came down. Well, of course, in order to play emulators, you got to have ROMs. So you got to have the ROM sets for Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, etc., etc. Right. So they started sharing those, and in the beginning, nobody cared. Well, all of a sudden, emulation became popular. All of a sudden, the classics were starting to make this comeback. And as a result, all of a sudden, Nintendo started sending out cease and desist letters. You are hosting our intellectual property. And what's even worse is they used this IDSA, the Interactive Digital Software Association. They hired these thugs. These guys were literally like Greedo or, you know, Guido. I meant Greedo from Star Wars and Guido from Risky Business. All right. They started hiring these people to represent them. When representing means strong-arming, bullying, and really being a pain in the ass to these emulation sites. Anyway, so I started the show to come down on these people, saying, listen, you guys didn't give a rat's ass about Donkey Kong, the original. You didn't care about Donkey Kong. You didn't care about Pac-Man. You didn't care about any of this stuff until we came around and made it popular again. And how do you thank us for that? How do you thank us for putting your IP back into the public's eye? You thank us by telling us you're going to shut down our site. You're going to send lawyers over to break our legs. And this is going on even today. Our good buddies over at Atari, which is, you know, really not Atari anymore. Remember when Atari was cool and they had everything? And then the pre-Activision people all got up and left and basically buried Atari under great titles from Activision. Well, Atari hasn't been Atari for like 20 years, so it's Atari in name only. These guys essentially knocked on this guy Andrew Davies' door. He's been running a website called Atari2600.org for well over 10 years. 12, 13 years, something like that. Anyway. So Andrew Davies been doing non-commercial programming. He's been making new games for the 2600. He's been, you know, keeping the Atari alive for a lot of us. All of a sudden, Atari's, you know, general counsel writes to him and says, hey, you need to begin immediate arrangements to hand over Atari2600.org because it has Atari in the name and we own it. It's like, you little bitches. I can say bitches, right? You guys aren't offended if I say bitches and keep this as iTunes clean. I guess we'll find out. What little bitches, right, to do that? You know, this guy has done nothing to them. He's not even hosting ROMs, for crying out loud. And these guys are going after him. You know what they're going to do with that domain? You know what they're going to do with that domain? They're going to take Atari2600.org and redirect it to Atari.com, which is pimping out more of their useless, worthless, you know, Matrix 2012, goofy-ass RPG that'll be dead in less than 6 months because nobody plays their crap. That's what they're going to do with Atari2600.org instead of doing it the way they should be doing it and supporting them, saying, hey, what can we do for you? You've been a big champion of our stuff. We love you. What can we do to help you? Would you like some manuals? Is there anything you need to help you code? Because we love the fact that you're keeping our stuff alive. But no. You get a cease and desist letter. You get, hand over your domain now, pal, or we'll sick the evil Gestapo on you. That is so sucky that Atari's doing this. You know, Nintendo wasn't even doing it. Nintendo used to be like the worst people ever. If you so much as put a Mario icon on your website, they would come and jump all over your ass. Now they're a little easier with it. As long as you're not, you know, horking Nintendo DS ROMs on your site, they kind of let it go. And that's the way it should be. For God's sakes, these are your fans. These are the people that are buying your product, that used to buy your product and will continue to buy your product, especially if you're not being an ass. So, thank you, Atari, for being bitches. I've already said bitches, so if I can't say bitches, then I'm screwed anyway. And that wraps up the Bits and Bytes segment. Again, Bits and Bytes requires your contribution. Now, these are the ones that I came up with over the course of the last month, but we would like to hear from you. What do you think is important to the retro gaming community? What kind of news and information have you come across? What would you like to promote that maybe you're working on a 2600 game you'd like us to talk about? Bits and Bytes at RetroGamingRadio.com or BitsBytes at RetroGamingRadio.com. Please send in your articles. We would love to see it. All right. We are ready to move on to the reviews. We've got three titles to review for you this show, and I'm very excited. These are really great titles. First up, Amiga Forever from Cloanto. Now, we've talked about and we reviewed Amiga Forever in the past, but I'm telling you, Amiga Forever is a package that has evolved so fast and so far since its incarnation. It really deserves to be looked at every couple of years. And if you haven't seen it lately, you're really missing out because they've really done some insane stuff with Amiga Forever. First of all, what is Amiga Forever, right? Commodore Amiga was a very cult-like popular 16-bit computer in the mid to late 80s. And it had a huge following, but unfortunately, despite the fact that it was incredibly powerful and it had an operating system well above its time, Commodore just chose to market it incorrectly. And there were all sorts of other little issues, too. But suffice to say that Amiga emulation is very complicated. You think Android is a fragmented market. Let me tell you about Amiga. All right. First of all, the hardware differences on the Amiga were insane. We had an Amiga 1000. That was the first model that came out. Then we had a 500, an Amiga 500, which was a more consumer home version, where the 1000 was really sort of almost a business class one. It cost a fortune. Then came the 2000. The Amiga 2000 looked more like a PC because it had a separate keyboard and it looked more like a professional computer. And then they came out with a 3000, which was supposed to use this brand new chipset that was going to give us super VGA graphics instead of just VGA graphics, etc. Well, that didn't work out. So then we got a 3000 that had the old graphics but had some slightly better hardware. And then this kept going on and on. Then they came out with that new chipset, and then we had the Amiga 1200, we had the Amiga 4000, and even sometimes they re-released it like as the 4000 Tower or the 1200 CD. Then we had consoles, then we had the Amiga CD TV, we had the Amiga CD 32. So you can understand, you know, how emulation in this particular case is kind of difficult. As a bonus, they upgraded the ROMs inside these computers fairly regularly. And there was a synergy between the hardware ROM chip called Kickstart that was in the Amiga and the actual software, the workbench, the DOS or the Windows, if you will. They had 1.3, they had 2.0, 2.05, 3.0, 3.05. I mean, the configuration is simply insane. Then you have other things that nobody ever thinks about. How much memory? Chip RAM, fast RAM, slow RAM, 1 megabyte, fatter Agnes. What the hell are you people talking about? So, understandably so, when you bring up an Amiga emulator, it's a little complicated. What the hell is PAL and NTSC? Why do I care? All these things are just a pain in the butt. It's not like a Sega Genesis emulator where you run it, you choose a screen size, you point a ROM to it, and poof, you play it. No, Amiga emulation's never been like that. It's always been a huge, horrifying pain in the ass. Now, Amiga Forever's goal was to create a turnkey, that means you don't have to know what the hell you're doing, package to provide you with Amiga emulation. And the package that they put together is insane, and it's all built around something called the Retro Player Platform, the RP9 platform. And we're going to talk more about RP9 in a minute. Now, the video that you're seeing in the background right now is actually going to show you how RP9 works. as well as show you the built-in content that comes with the software. Now, Amiga Forever comes in a variety of different packages. The very cheap packages, the inexpensive packages, the $10 packages will get you the bare basics that you need. The bare basics that you need to get started with Amiga emulation. The higher up packages have more stuff, more content, videos, gallery stuff. But for the most part, you really only need the bare bones basics because of the RP9 platform. The Amiga was known for two things. Games, which it had some of the greatest games ever, and it was known for something called demos, or tech demos, or the demo scene. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. The Amiga Forever package comes on a CD, and you install it, or you can run it straight from the CD itself. Now, I like to install stuff. I like to not have to have the CD in there to use it. Plus, you get a little performance increase that way. Once you've installed this package, and it's all self-installing and self-updating, fantastic, right? So once you get this sucker running, you get a very nice, pleasant interface that has a bunch of tabs along the top that asks you what you want to do. Do you want to play games? Do you want to view demos? Would you like to run a system? And I'm going to get to that in a minute. Or do you want to look at the gallery and or watch videos? So that's what you got going on. Now, as you go through the content, let's say you go over to games, and inside the games are a whole bunch of shareware, freeware, or licensed stuff that Amiga Forever was able to put together for you legally. Now, this does include some of the big titles like Deluxe Galaga that I always talk about, that's a fantastic game that everybody should play. That's included in the package. You don't have to go download it. You don't have to figure out how to unpack it. You don't have to know how to boot it. None of that stuff. You go to the Games tab, you find Deluxe Galaga, you double-click it, and you're playing. It's that easy. And that's the way it should be. Every time you highlight an item, you can actually submit ratings, and it also shows you screenshots as well as write-ups about the product. When did it come out? What sort of hardware did it use? Who's the author? All of this metadata is all included inside this RP9 platform. So once you run it, the game window pops up, and again, you're probably seeing most of this on the screen behind in the RGR Plus TV window. Once you launch the game off, you're good. And when you're done playing, you hold down Escape for a few seconds, your cursor reappears, your mouse pointer, you close it, and you move on. That's how turnkey this thing is. It's fantastic. Now, demos. Let's talk about demos. You've heard me talk about State of the Art. You've heard me talk about Nine Fingers. You've heard me talk about Desert Dream. Odyssey. You've heard me talk about a lot of great demos. And what are demos? Okay, for those of you who are uninitiated, let me tell you. Programmers that don't want to use their talents for piracy or for developing games do demos. What they do is they take a computer like the Amiga and they make it do stuff it's not supposed to do. They exploit hardware tricks. They create the most cool demonstrations of their programming and hardware prowess. And they're demos. It's like watching a trailer or a reel. It essentially is a demonstration of the coder's talent and the hardware's capabilities. These things are great. Some of them are like freaking movies, man. Desert Dream is like a movie. Nine Fingers looks like they were digitizing, you know, live video, and they were. But you're talking about a machine in 1984 doing this. So watching these demos are an insane way of seeing just how capable the hardware was back in that time. And of course, Amiga Forever has managed to license a whole bunch of those from either the original demo people themselves or other means to get them in front of you. If you want to watch Nine Fingers, you don't have to know anything. You run Amiga Forever, you click the demo tab, you go to Nine Fingers, you double click it, and you're enjoying the Nine Fingers demo. It's that easy. Now, onto the Systems tab. What's in this guy? Well, because there are so many diverse types of Amigas, different versions of Amiga software, etc., there is a plethora of different ways to enjoy the Amiga. If you want to see the original Amiga 1000, what it looked like, and compare and contrast it to, say, the Amiga CD32, which has a really cool boot intro animation, all of these things, you can just fire them up. Fire up an Amiga 1200. Fire up one of the new Amiga SYS operating system, which is essentially Amiga for Amiga 3.9, Amiga DOS 3.9. And it actually has to do a whole install process. It downloads it for you off of Amiga Forever site, and you have to go through an install process. It's actually like a legitimate operating system. It installs it on a virtual hard drive, and now you're using a version of the Amiga operating system that, quite frankly, looks better than Windows, better than Mac. It looks fantastic, and you'll see some of that in the window behind you. Suffice to say, the systems is a great way to experience and a good starting point that if you get some game that you want to play but you don't know which platform or which configuration you need to use to play it, you can use these systems to help kind of guide you. Then, of course, rounding it up are a historical look at the product, looking at the Amiga from a historical point of view. The gallery has photographs, pictures, documents from Commodore's history. The videos have some amazing, there's some amazing videos in there. Most of them you'll have to front for the big DVD versions if you want to get those videos. But a couple are included in most versions. I'll give you a taste of what the Amiga's history was like. A lot of us, remember, the Amiga was pre-internet for the most part, and a lot of us who are huge Amiga fans, we didn't have low-level access to, you know, somebody's Facebook or their Google Plus profile where we could ask them questions and get information in real time. We were, you know, relegated to some very archaic means of getting information. A lot of us haven't seen these videos before. We've never seen all of these documents. This information feed that people get now, they take for granted because we didn't have access to that sort of thing. And this gallery, these videos, are there to help us come to terms with that sort of thing, the stuff that we missed. Finally, what drives this whole thing is something called the RP9, or Retro Player Platform. This is really clever. These guys put this together. And you're going to see me building Super Frog, a playable, an RP9 version of Super Frog, to be played right inside of Amiga Forever. I'm doing it on the screen in the video. Essentially, what an RP9 is, it's a zip file that contains a whole bunch of stuff. Game disk images, or ROMs. Photographs of gameplay, even video clips, text documents, metadata, all this stuff is wrapped up into a nice, neat little single file package that you feed right to Amiga Forever and you play it. Now, in the demo, I take all four discs of Super Frog and I bring them into the RP9 creator. Once it's created, it inserts it into the Amiga Forever interface. I can then go in to the RP9 editor, bring that RP9 package up, add my screenshots, add my metadata, make changes, change what disks mount in which drives. All of these things can be controlled inside this RP9 package. It's unbelievable. It's so cool. And they have RP9 for Commodore 64 and other platforms too. But, you know, we're focusing on Amiga right now, so who cares about those platforms? So you can literally build your own RP9s with, like, really not a lot of experience. I was able, as you can see by the video, to get Super Frog up and running in no time. So this RP9 is a core component of these Forever packages, the Amiga Forever, Commodore 64 Forever. This is an important breakthrough for the retro community in general. Imagine just being able to download one single file and having the game and the documentation and the metadata and the screenshots and the play videos all in one nice, neat package. It's fantastic. If you are listening to this show as a podcast or on your MP3 player and you're not watching the video, I recommend that you get an opportunity to go back and check out the video showing me using the package and how RP9 works, because it puts it in much better perspective. If you go over to Cloanto's site, AmigaForever.com, and you go to AmigaForever.com/KeepItRetro, you can get, I think it's a 10% off discount with Cloanto to get a little cheaper deal on that package. AmigaForever.com/KeepItRetro. Great guys over there. I always have a good time interfacing with them and getting their new product and trying it out and getting my questions answered. They've been very good to the show over the years. And in fact, if you go into Amiga Forever's package and you go to the, I think it's under gallery, inside there you can actually listen to the very first interview that we did with Michael Batilana. See, again, it's been like 10 years. We first did our first interview there. You can see a picture of myself and Brian Kidhype Smith and Michael there, as well as listen to the show. So it's really neat. It's a neat deal, and you know, for $10, you're talking about $10. You've spent more on goofy-ass cut-the-rope iPhone apps in the last week, I'm sure. You can spend $10 and get a real Amiga emulator and play real Amiga games in the way that they were meant to be played. And you get this cool RP9 editor to go with it, so it's a good deal. Playable on the CD or installable. It is Windows-based, but there are Amiga packages out there that do run on other platforms. But this is a turnkey Windows solution. I'm trying to think if I've forgotten anything. I really want to make sure that people understand what a great product this is and that it can really open up your library of playable games, because there's so many things that came out on the Amiga that were just pure gold that have never been done again. So check it out. AmigaForever.com/KeepItRetro for your discount. That is the Cloanto Amiga Forever 2012 package. All right, let's move on to Bit Trip Complete for the Nintendo Wii. Bit Trip Complete is a culmination, a collection of 6 Bit Trip games that all came out individually. This is a retail SKU, this Bit Trip Complete. You go to the store, you buy it on a disc, and it contains all 6 of the WiiWare downloadable versions of Bit Trip games. Now, the Bit Trip series, the whole point of it is to, much like the Super Smash Land that we talked about earlier, was to take and recreate the goodness of retro gaming. Now, there's 6 different packages. Each one has a unique look at the retro gaming environment. The one I'm going to talk about for the purposes of this interview, or this review rather, is Bit Trip Runner. Now, you've seen this game cloned a million times on cell phones, and the reason is because it's very simple. There's not a ton of interaction necessary to make it a great game. Bit Trip Runner has you constantly running sideways on a scrolling play field. You can't stop. You have one button and D-pad control. It starts you off very simple. Get to the end of the level without dying. If you die, you don't even die. You just go back to the beginning of the level. So it's a very fast-paced game. They start you off nice and slow. And using one button, you jump over things, you jump upstairs, you jump and collect treasures. Based on how well you do, you might get a bonus level. And the bonus levels are like complete Pitfall ripoffs. They look exactly like Pitfall. It's cool. Anyway, using a single button to jump, you navigate the first screen. And then you go to the next level, then the next level, the next level. It gets progressively harder, faster, and then other things come in. Like being able to slide or duck underneath something. The game never gets complicated on controls because it ups the stakes so quickly in terms of your reaction time. I'm telling you, you think that playing Halo makes you a badass? Not true. If you want to sharpen your reaction times and show how badass you really are, play Bit Trip Runner. See if you can get 5 or 6 levels into that, and then you can tell me you're a badass. Because these bit games are just fanatical. They take some of that kind of that kind of Tempest 2000 sort of look. They've got, it's all nice big chunky pixels, and it's got goofy psychedelic effects going in the background to distract you. They use all the scoring and stuff are all done with giant pixel numbers. It's an experience that you have to see and play to really understand why it's so cool. Some of the other games included offer you almost like shooters. There's one, for example, that for some reason kind of reminded me of Cosmic Arc. You have a gun turret essentially in the middle of the screen. And as you push in one of the 4 directions on the D-pad, it puts sort of a laser beam out in that direction. And then when you actually hit the fire button, it sends a jolt of energy that direction. So it's a 4-way shooter. But instead of like in Cosmic Arc where the items are coming straight at your laser, you have dots floating along on the screen, and you have to sync up your laser fire to hit those dots. There's one that's a sideways version, essentially, of Pong. It's a Pong game, but they add music and rhythm and all these other things to just make it a totally trippy, bit trip, and with bits, right? It's a trippy bit experience. And all six of these games, there's one or two that kind of overlap a little bit in how they operate. You know, they're similar. But every one of these becomes this huge score attack, you know. And some of the games, as you play and you start filling up these grids, and as you fill up the grids, it moves you to the next level. Well, as you miss what you're shooting at or defending or blocking or whatever, you start losing points. And if you go down below that grid, it rolls you back to the lower level. So you're not only trying to score well, but you're trying to keep yourself in the higher levels where there's more points. These are brilliant examples of greed, one more time, severely addictive, retroactive, totally trippy games. And you get six for the price of one Wii game, which I think is $39. So $40, six games, so that's like what, $8 a piece? So that may be a little high for some people for, you know, trippy, retro, one, two button type games. But believe me, they are so addictive. Last year when I had some friends over from out of town, a lot of the crew from Monroepalooza, we played this Bit Trip Runner, and it was wild. It's just, it is so mesmerizing and addictive. And you're seeing video of it in the background. It's so addictive, and it's just, it's one of those things where, like, if you sound interested but you don't want to buy the CD, go buy the WiiWare version of Bit Trip Runner, at least, and see if that works for you. And if that works for you, then pick up some of the other ones or go out and get the disc. Now, I'm absolutely positive that this game will drop in price from $39 to $29 before the holidays. However, you know, now you're talking about a much better deal. You're talking about, like, what, $5 a game or $4 a game. And they're definitely, definitely worth that. These are high-quality games, the Bit Trip series. Especially Bit Trip Runner. Bit Trip Runner is just one of those things. I mean, when I was doing the pre-play for this review, I just couldn't pull myself off of it. I kept playing and playing. And my little boy, my 5-year-old, was watching it. And in the first couple levels, he's like, "Dad, is that a game I can play? Can I play that, Dad?" You know, because I keep telling him, you know, there are games for kids and there's games for grown-ups. Is that a kid's game, Dad? It's like, well, yeah, I think you can play this, Brian. I mean, it's a single button click, for crying out loud. He can do that. He's got rhythm. And then it's like all of a sudden now there's sliding and all this other stuff going on. The level's coming at you 500 million miles an hour. And it's like, you know what, Brian? I just decided this is probably not a kid's game. It's like, okay, Dad, you're right. This is not a kid's game. Bit Trip Complete for the Wii. It's available as a retail SKU, or you can download the games individually off of the WiiWare Marketplace. Again, can't recommend it enough. If what you want is old school retro play on a modern console, you simply cannot beat this. This is like the golden chalice for that exact deal. And if you want one more time addictive score attack quality, this is it. Bit Trip Complete. Pick it up. You'll love it. The last review I've got for you is Super Mario Brothers. And Super Mario Brothers, of course, is just an iconic game. Even not being a Nintendo fan, Super Mario Brothers addicted me in the arcade. I never bought an NES to play it, even though it was almost pixel perfect, or it was pixel perfect. I played a lot of it, but in the arcade only. Well, Super Mario Brothers is a side-scrolling platformer. For those of you who are living under a rock or dead, Super Mario Brothers is a side-scroller arcade game with hidden levels, hidden power-ups. You eat a mushroom, you get big. You know, go figure, what kind of message are we sending to our children? You eat a mushroom, you get big, you get a star, you become invincible, you gotta jump on top of these little turtles and knock their shells around. You know what I'm talking about. You know what Super Mario Brothers is. I don't need to go into a big tirade about it. What you do want to know, though, is how is Super Mario Brothers on the 3DS? Well, that's what we're here to talk about. When the 3DS first came out, it was $250. And a lot of people said, well, I'm simply not going to do it. That's too much money, and I'm not going to get into it. 3D is a gimmick. It's never going to go anywhere, blah, blah, blah. And so nobody bought into it. Well, a handful of people did buy into it. We went ahead and we bought it. We loved it. We thought there could be more games, but, you know, some first-party stuff would be nice. But in any event, the early adopters... before the huge price drop that came out just recently, became what Nintendo called as ambassadors. They said, listen, if you buy a 3DS at full price, you bought one already, you're part of our ambassador program, we're going to reward you for your loyalty by offering you 10 free games from our forthcoming virtual console packs. And, you know, there's tons of them. There are tons of games. I'm not going to go into the specifics because we'll probably be reviewing other ones on the show. But, of course, for me, it's all about Super Mario Brothers, right? Because Super Mario Brothers is the one big Nintendo game that I played in the past. So how does it look? I mean, what's the emulation like? I'm pleased to say that it is pretty much dead on. Even this is, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be, but I don't think so, this is a virtual console version of the NES Super Mario Brothers. It's not the arcade port. It is the NES version. As such, when the screen gets filled with bad guys, and at certain points in the game, you start seeing hardware limitations, slight flickering of graphics, things like that. These are all totally normal in 8-bit consoles. Commodore 64 had them, and of course the NES had them. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen them before. But anyway, I played through the first few worlds, which is, you know, how far I always got, and played this thing, and it plays dead on accurate. That I went ahead and I played with my NES emulator on my tablet, and I hooked up the Wii remote and I put Super Mario on there, and I played it directly in compare and contrast with the 3DS version, and it plays great. It plays exactly how I remember. It even flickers in the right spots that I remember. So emulation wise, it's top notch. Unlike some games that come out for the 3DS, there are no extras. Does it allow save states? Is something that people ask. The whole thing is a save state. What it does is, wherever you're at, if you go to the home screen, you leave the game, it suspends it. So when you go back, you pick up right where you left off. Now, you can't save multiple save states. So if your brother or your sister or your wife or something picks it up and they want to play, then they'll pick up right where you left off. There's no way to have more than one person playing at a time. But suffice to say, the game plays exactly the way you would want it to play. Now, a lot of people are complaining about the size of the screen. The 3DS screen is a little smaller, especially if you happen to have a DSi XL that you're used to having this big, giant, beautiful screen, or you happen to be of advancing age, as so many of us retro gamers are. You're going to find out that the screen appears to be a little bit small. Now, what they really could have done, right, is they could have cropped the screen. You know, there's a lot of white space on the top and bottom of the screen. They could have letterboxed it a little bit and made it bigger. Of course, the diehard fans would have noticed that and bitched about it. So we don't complain about the fact that they made it perfectly emulated in a 1.33:1 ratio. Let's not talk about that. Let's let them continue to keep that up. Suffice to say, the game plays incredibly well, as I've already told you. Everything is smooth. The analog stick works great, the analog pad, or if you prefer to use the D-pad, which a lot of people for some reason have a problem with the D-pad on the 3DS. I don't know what their problem is, but they don't like it. The analog stick works fine. It's a top-notch little title. Now, we were promised in the past that these ambassador games would get a full widespread release at some point, and once they did, we were going to get great features like online play. So if you wanted to play Mario Brothers with a buddy, then you'd be able to do so. Who knows if that's going to come around. There's no additional 3D features to this. The game is not in pseudo 3D or any sort of 3D additions. This is a straight, no-frills, virtual console version of Super Mario Brothers. And there's nothing wrong with that. The game is exactly what you would expect it to be and what you'd want it to be. Now, again, you can't purchase this game yet. However, if you did purchase your 3DS before the cutoff date, which was the middle of August, and you signed into Club Nintendo, then you are automatically authorized to download those games. You can go pick them up right now for free, along with all the other games that they put out. So if you're a 3DS ambassador, I would highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite Nintendo games of all time. If you're not, then you're going to have to wait and see what comes up, or Of course, if you have a portable device and you are of the inclination, you can play it emulated on a portable device or on your PC. Well, listen, gang, I hope you enjoy the show. I've already started the prep work for the next show. One of the questions that have been asked is, when the next show comes out, which is this show, how will we be able to access the other shows? Because right now, the archives are offline. And I'm going to tell you right now, this show is going to come out before the archives are back online. So the first show is going to be lost for a short period of time while I put the new archive system into place. So please be patient. The archive system will allow you to enjoy each show in its full format, in the full RGR TV format. Don't worry about that. It's going to be preserved, so you don't have to worry. And some of the older shows will become online as well as part of the archives. Now, I do want to point out, as I'm closing up the show, we do have the Retro Gaming Radio Plus radio station on Shoutcast. Go to shoutcast.com and type in Retro Gaming Radio in the search box, and you can listen to classic Retro Gaming Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, along with some of my other content programming, Passenger Seat Radio, Dual Screen Radio, Wii Minute Radio that Alex J. Lopez produced. And every week we put new stuff on there. Alex has done a great job at keeping the content rotated, and we have a new Passenger Seat Radio every single week almost, and that gets put into rotation. So if what you want to do is tune in radio style and get some of the older shows, Retro Gaming Radio Plus is definitely your choice, your solution. What else do I got? I think that's just about it. Once again, I will shamelessly self-promote my David Crane interview, my original David Crane interview where we talked about Pitfall and Ghostbusters and all that cool stuff, is available as a Kindle single. We're going to go ahead and promote you straight to that page in the browser on the RGR Plus TV screen. Or you can just go to Kindle.com and search for Retro Gaming Radio. It's the only one out there, and you'll recognize my ugly mug talking to David Crane. It's a full transcript of the hour and a half, almost 2 hour interview that I did with him. For those of you who maybe can't listen on the go, but are interested in hearing what David Crane had to say, you can catch that in a 99-cent digital Kindle edition. All right, gang. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Retro Gaming Radio. This is show number 2. That's about it. Do visit us at our website, RetroGamingRadio.com. Join us at Monroe World Forums at MonroeWorld.com/forums. And, of course, you can join us on Google+, myself, Shane Monroe, Alex J. Lopez, and Chris Henschel, who is responsible for the dual screen radio stuff. We're all on Google+. We watch it like a hawk, and you can join us, come into our circles, and get some of the latest information, much of it retro in nature, I might add. Right away, even before the show comes out. This is Shane R. Monroe with Retro Gaming Radio saying, until next time, keep it retro.